राजोवाच
न
जानामि महाभाग परं कर्म प्रविद्धति ब्रूहि मे विमलं ज्ञानम् येन मुच्येय
कर्मभिः
राजोवाच न जानामि महाभाग परं कर्म प्रविद्धति ब्रूहि मे विमलं ज्ञानम् येन मुच्येय
कर्मभिः
Translation by His Divine Grace, Srila Bhaicharan Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. The king replied, O great soul Narada, my intelligence is entangled in fruitive activities. Therefore, I do not know the ultimate goal of life. Kindly instruct me in pure knowledge so that I can get out of the entanglement of fruitive activities. The king replied,
O great soul, Narada,
my intelligence is entangled in fruitive activities. Therefore, I do not know the ultimate goal of life.
Kindly instruct me
in pure knowledge
so that I can get out
of the entanglement
of fruitive activities.
Purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Bhaicharan Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Sri Narottama Das Thakur has sung, Satsanga chari hoinu asate vilas, te karone lagilo je karma bandha fas. As long as a person is entangled in fruitive activities, he is bound to accept one body after another. This is called karma bandha fas. Entanglement in fruitive activities. It does not matter whether one is entangled in pious or impious activities, for both are causes for further entanglement in material bodies. By pious activities, one can take birth in a rich family and get a good education and a beautiful body. But this does not mean that the distresses of life are ultimately eliminated. In the Western countries, it is not unusual for one to take birth in a rich aristocratic family, nor is it unusual for one to have a good education. And a very beautiful body. But this does not mean that Westerners are free from the distresses of life. Although at the present moment, the younger generation, Western countries, has sufficient education, beauty and wealth, and although there is enough food, clothing, and facilities for sense gratification, they are in distress. Indeed, they are so distressed that they become hippies. And the laws of nature force them to accept a wretched life. Thus, they go about unclean and without shelter or food, and they are forced to sleep in the street. It can be concluded that one cannot become happy simply by performing pious activities. It is not a fact that those who are born with a silver spoon in their mouth are free from the material miseries of birth, old age, disease, and death. The conclusion is that one cannot be happy simply by executing pious or impious activities. Such activities simply cause entanglement and transmigrating from one body to another. Narottam Das Thakur has called this karma bandha phas. King Prachinha Barhishat admitted this fact and frankly asked Narad Muni how he could get out of this karma bandha phas, entanglement and fruitive activities. This is actually the stage of knowledge indicated in the first verse of Vedanta Sutra. Atato brahma jigyasa. When one actually reaches the platform of frustration in attempt to discharge karma bandha phas, he inquires about the real values of life, which is called brahma jigyasa. In order to inquire about the ultimate goal of life, the Vedas, Mundaka Upanishad 11.2.12, enjoin, Tadvijnanartham sa gurumiva vigarchet. In order to understand the transcendental science, one must approach a bona fide spiritual master. King Prachinha Barhishat found the best spiritual master, Narada Muni, and he therefore asked him about that knowledge by which one can get out of the entanglement of karma bandha phas, fruitive activities. This is the actual business of human life. Jivasya tattva jigyasa narto yascheha karmavi, as stated in the second chapter of the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam 1.2.10. A human being's only business is inquiring from a bona fide spiritual master about extrication from the entanglement of karma bandha phas. Harihi Om Tat Sat. Thus ends the Bhaktivedanta Swami translation purport to the Srimad Bhagavatam, 4th canto, 25th chapter, 5th verse, in the matter of the characteristics of King Puranjana. So here is a turning point in the discussions between King Prachinha Barhi and Narad, where King Prachinha Barhi now is asking Narad to instruct him. That he realizes he doesn't know what is the truth, what is the absolute truth. Therefore, he needs to hear from an authority. Absolute truth can't be understood just by mental speculation or by experimentation. One needs to hear from someone who knows. Because it's beyond the experimentation of the material world. It's beyond the perception of the material world. So anybody in the material world, just by their own efforts, cannot really understand definitively what the spiritual world is, what the spiritual reality is. They need to hear from somebody who's been to the spiritual world or who's received a message from the spiritual world what the actual situation is. Or someone who's understood from the scripture and the previous acharyas properly what is the absolute truth. So Narada explained in the previous verse that The prime goal of human birth is to get rid of all the miseries and to achieve real happiness. But by fruitive activities mean karma. By karma you can achieve it. And Prabhupada graphically in this purport explained, illustrated how people may be born in a good family with money, have a beautiful body, but still be miserable. When Prabhupada wrote this purport some 20 years ago, that time the youths were becoming hippies. So now they're becoming punks. Right? Well, I don't know the latest. I mean, I'm still already a few years old, but it was a couple years ago, punks with the yellow and green and blue hair, and people get frustrated in the material life. By the time you're 16 years old in the West, you're already bored with everything, if it takes that long. So people, they don't know, the young people don't know what to do, so they get into all kinds of crazy things. I was watching a documentary on the plane about this punk group. First it said how each one gave his personal history, and he said how they were the most famous punk group in the UK and the world. And they were said how each of them, one said, "I was born by accident. My mother told me that you're an accident. A contraceptive slipped. I never wanted you as a child, but I got you now," so like that. And each one had this disaster story of how nobody cared for them. One was like a orphan or brought up in some kind of foster home because his parents were drug addicts, and there was like this horrible kind of background. And so they had developed this attitude like the whole world is rotten, and they were super cynical. And at the end of the story, one died of a heroin overdose and the other committed suicide. And I was like, what is, you know. But they were the musical idols of so many young people. But their own lives were a total disaster. But they were the role models that many people were following. And it's, you know, it's incredible how the influence of people, certain people who are really themselves totally disoriented about what the reality is leading other young people in a similar way. It's like Prabhupada, he wanted to provide leadership for young people. And remarkably enough, even though he was such an elderly person in terms of material vision, he was able to attract a large number of young people. Even one day in Mayapur, he mentions that you are all young people, you have taken to this Krishna consciousness, and physically, I mean, materially speaking, I am an old man. We are from different cultures, you are from the West, I am from India. So normally, with so many differences, you won't have a close relationship, but between us, there's so much love and there's so much relationship. How is it possible? So this proves it's transcendental. That somehow Prabhupada was able to bridge all these gaps and capture the imagination and the intelligence of many young people and inspire them to make radical changes in their lifestyle and to try to achieve for actual liberation from these miseries of life and to achieve real happiness in life. Now you have many people who are, of course, not everybody is a hippie or a punk, and most people maybe working in their normal jobs, and but that doesn't mean that they're also free from the miseries of life. I was in one newspaper, I did an article that in America, 40% of marriages break in divorce. Now, recently, they've progressed up to 50%. But that was a few years ago. And of those who didn't break, they did a poll from them, how many are happy? And of the people who were married, that did not divorce, 90% said they were not happy. And 10% said they were happy. And the 90% said the 10% are lying. And then they said, well, then why, if you're not happy, why are you staying together? So then they gave reason, the children, let's confirm. Then they gave the reason of economics. It was too expensive to be separate. Or it was just, you know, laziness. It was like too much trouble to try to... And like that, they gave these different reasons. Religion was a big reason why. Many were just together because of religion. So it's like, of course, most of the people are married, or... That's not even true anymore. But anyway, so those are the, so many people, there are very few people who are actually happy. The materialists, they say, well, only 10% of the people are really happy, and so they're all like striving to be that 10%, but that's like all kind of a illusory thing, because people think, well, I'll be happy when I get a big car and a big house and a big position. And of course, when they get those things, still they don't feel satisfied. So this King Prachinabarhi, he's an emperor of the entire world. And what more do you have to achieve? I mean, now they don't have the emperors of the whole world, but you can imagine there's a few people who would like to be the economic moguls or the businessmen, you know, bigger than everybody else, or maybe some people aspire to be the biggest political leader. But Prachinabarhi Maharaj, he achieved it. He was the emperor of the world. What more can you get? I mean, that's... He reached the epitome of material success on this planet. But Narada Muni is telling him that by fruitive activity you can't be happy. You don't solve the real problems of material life. And he admits, actually it's true. I'm just all entangled into these karmas. And he was successful at karma. He was a success story. Right? Through his good karmas to become an emperor of the world, you had to do some good karmas in your previous life, otherwise you'll become emperor by being born in the previous emperor's family as the first child. So it's not something you can just set up on your own. And then after that you have to be qualified enough to be accepted by the ministers and the previous king that you should be the next ruler. So somehow he got through all those things, but he admitted, I'm not satisfied, I'm all entangled in this karmas. Can you tell me what the real purpose of life is? Now that's a real success story. Just that the person asks, what am I here for? What is the purpose of my life? If people would be taught that they have to ask this question. This is the basic instruction of the Vedas. The Vedanta Sutra begins from the word Atata Brahma Jigyasa. Inquire into what is the absolute truth. I was just in America for the installation of Radha Shyam Sundar in Alachua. And when you pass to America now, everybody's feverish over the election of their new president, what's happening in November. But I also was just, you know, flashing that here you got also, and now America's the big political so-called superpower in the world. And you have these people vying, you know, for who's going to be the next president or who is the president. But the remarkable thing is you could be the president of America, or you could be the prime minister of Australia, or premier of one of the provinces. Of course, even this life, you don't know what someone will be after 10 years. I mean, just like the big chancellor, Schroeder, in Germany, who was, you know, practically an absolute power for 30 years or something of his Christian Democratic Party. And now he's, because he took some donations from people for his party, and he won't reveal who gave the donations, and it was done against the law, he's practically in disgrace and ostracized from his party, and he's like, they didn't even want to invite him to the anniversary of the end of the Iron Curtain and the breaking of the Berlin Wall, although he was the premier when it happened. So even in this life, you don't know what karma brings somebody. But what I was really thinking about was how these leaders, they don't know what the clue what their next life is going to be, their struggle, you know, and their campaigning, and they finally get their position that they want. Next life, they could be a dog. They could be a hog. They could be, you know, maybe they're a human being. They could be, you know, maybe at the time of death, he's thinking, I got to get that Gaddafi in Libya. Next birth, they're born in Libya, you know. I mean, who knows? The very thing that they're most obsessed with, that they could be brought to, because that's the way the law of karma works. But all the big, big leaders and the big thinkers in the whole Western world, they don't have a clue how the material world works. This is like the ABCs, the kindergarten of Vedic knowledge, is at least know how the material world works. So the first thing people learn, okay, is do good karmas and then I get a better next birth. At least materially, they know that much. So that's what King Vajinavari, he played his things obviously right. That's how he got to be the emperor. Otherwise, doing a lot of good karma, you don't become an emperor, or even don't become a premier or a chief minister or whatever it may be. But they may not know how they get there, that they have a good store of good karma from the past. But even you have the good karma runs out. If they don't even know about karma, they don't even know about good karma, they don't know about future births, what to speak of knowing about how to get out of the material world. I mean, it's like you get so much wrapped up into what you're doing that you just forget everything else. It's like, you know, I told this story here maybe one time about the Brahmana who took out the took the position of Indra. 18th chapter of Bhagavad Gita. In the Padma Purana, it mentions Lord Shiva is explaining the glories of the 18th chapter to Mother Parvati. And he explains to her how the 18th chapter is the most powerful of all the chapters of the Bhagavad Gita. And she wants to hear an example. So he said, well, okay, I'll give you an example. Once there was an Indra. At that time, he had his capital on the side of Mount Meru in a city called Amaravati, which was constructed by Vishwakarma, the architect engineer of the devas. So there Indra, he was sitting on his royal throne, and there was, you know, all the opulence. He's the lord of the three worlds, not only this planet, not only this solar system, but many galaxies and many parts of the material visible. What we see in the sky, all those stars, basically everything, he's the lord. So he's got millions and millions of planets and places under him. So there in his heavenly royal palace, different sages are praising him for his good qualities. Young junior devas are glorifying Gandharvas, are singing songs, you know, Jaya Indra Deva, Jaya Indra Deva, Jaya Indra Deva, Jaya Indra Deva. Then, you know, there's the cultural presentation, the apsaras or the divine damsels are performing the Bharatanatyam or the Devanatyam, whatever they do there, the particular style, I don't know. I might have been there, but I forgot it now, thanks to the laws of karma. And they were entertaining him, and you know, he was, you know, in this opulent situation, living for hundreds of thousands, millions of years, longevity. Prabhupada once, he was walking with us, and we were looking down at the roof in Mayapur. There was one of these migrations. You ever seen when the ants go from, like, they change their home from one place to the next, and then the queen's marching along with millions of ants workers, and each is carrying eggs on their head and food on their head and pollen and whatnot. And there's, like, you know, they're all piling off from one place to the next. And So we're looking down and we're thinking, look at these ants, they're such insignificant creatures, you know, how many days does their lifespan? You know, for human beings, you think, what is an ant, you know? But like we look down to them, there are entities on higher planets and higher dimensions that look down at the human beings, you know, with our cities and our highways, and they think, you know, look at these insignificant creatures. You know. By their calculation, our 1 year is their 1 day. So you can figure, you know, we live 100 years means it's 100 days of their life. So we're, you know, like a squirrel or something. I mean, I don't know what lives 100 days. You know, some little, you know, rodent or rat or mouse. I don't know what lives 100 days offhand. And maybe some biologist or a zoologist can tell us or what. But it's not a very significant creature. So like that, here's Indra. He's in this epitome of enjoyment. All the rishis and devas and apsaras in his royal court. All of a sudden, in the back of his court, two Vishnudutas come with a venerable brahmana. So then, he knows that Vishnudutas are messengers from Vishnu, the Supreme Lord, who's above him. And so he gets up to greet them, you know, what a rare occasion to have, you know, ambassadors from the Supreme Lord here. And how can I serve you? And they just kind of walk right up to him, and he's, you know, Hare Krishna, whatever, namaskar, hello, welcome, swagatam. And then they just kind of rush right by him, don't even pay any attention to him. They take the brahmana, pick him up, plop him right down on the seat of Indra, and boom, he's transferred into the Indra. And then the devas are looking, they're looking at the Vishnudutas, and then they start, Jaya Indra Deva, Jaya, you know, like, the king is dead, long live the king is dead, long live the king. Meaning, one king goes, new one comes. So, alright, new king, Jaya Indra Deva, Jaya Indra Deva, Jaya Indra Deva. And then the ex-Indra say, hey, wait a minute, you know, she's like, he just got laid off, you know, no tension, no explanation, nothing, he was, boom, out of a job. And he was like, well, I mean, come on, I mean, wow, what happened? Just like that, no warning, nothing, out of a job, ex-Indra, from Indra to ex, right? And he said, well, who is this guy anyway, how did he get there? And he does a quick, you know, scan of his karma. Hey, wait a minute, he doesn't have a big karma account like I did. I climbed Himalaya mountains, I bathed in the ocean, I planted trees along the roadside, I dug wells for the thirsty people, I worshipped Shiva and Durga, I did all kinds of austerities, I fasted for 13 and a half days and ekadasi on this thing and that and what, I did so many things, you know, and ekadasi, I just got excited and threw it in, but he didn't say ekadasi. That might have made a difference. But he went to everybody and I said, look, you know, I mean, come on, Vishnudutas put him there, why are we going to, you know, talk to Vishnu, you know, we got nothing to say about it. So then he went by the side of the ocean, the melt ocean, the Kirk Samudra, which is surrounding the planet of Vishnu, which he cannot approach, but he's at the border there, and he's meditating and praying to Vishnu to please, I need to communicate with you. And then Vishnu communicates and says, yes, what is it? What do you want? He said, well, my lord, I was your Indra. I was serving for so many years, and somehow I just got replaced by somebody from your messengers. And I just wanted to say that, I just don't understand, because I did, you know, austerities and penances and fasts, and I dug wells and planted trees in the roadside, and I did climb the Himalaya mountains, and I did 100 Aswamedh yagyas, and it's a lot of good karma. And I worshipped Manakshi and Shiva, and I did so many things, and I don't understand that this person, he didn't do any of those things. I mean, I couldn't see anything in his good karma that he did something like that. And how did he become Indra and how did I get removed? Sir, please, if you could explain. So then Lord Vishnu replied that, penances and austerities are not very important. And your sacrifices are like kind of the small, dry, sour fruits on a tree. I mean, not like really ripe, juicy fruits. Wrinkled, old, sour fruits. Nothing very significant. Nothing super special. I put this Brahmana in the place of Indra because he pleased me. He satisfied me. So that, you know, it's like all of a sudden, you know, the ex-Indra, sometimes you just forget everything's going on one way and then you remember actually there's a supreme authority in the universe and ultimately whatever he wants goes. And he was just doing things on the basis of his karma, so he had, you know, he didn't know how when he'd get another audience. So he was thinking real quick, and he said, "Well, my lord, could you please tell me what did this brahmana do that he pleased you so much?" It's like suddenly the whole orient, his whole life, whatever he'd been doing, all the good karmas, everything just got, you know, minimized to being practically almost useless. I mean, not useless, but not much. So he thought, he was a smart person, so he thought, okay, if you can't, you know, like, there's a saying in some places, if you can't beat town hall, then, you know, like, you can't beat them, join them, or, you know, try to learn from experiences. So, did he ask, you know, well, what is it that this person did? It was a pretty smart question, actually. And he could have gone all bitter or something, but he asked, you know, he wanted to know him. Then Vishnu said, well, this brahmana, every day without fail, he was chanting 5 verses from the 18th chapter of Bhagavad Gita. And because of that, he pleased me very much. And then the ex-Indra, 5 verses of the Bhagavad Gita, 18th climbing Himalaya mountains, resting in the cold water, doing that. You know, 100 Aswamedh Yajnas, and Aswamedh Yajna is a massive, like you have to do like an Olympic kind of thing just to make an Aswamedh Yajna. Thousands of people and brahmanas and feeding people. And this brahmana just completely, like, you know, got the gold medal, scored him out, knocked him off his seat. Hare Krishna, sorry, please. Just by 5 verses of the Bhagavad Gita, 18th chapter. Hare Krishna Kosalya. They got a loudspeaker outside? Should have one. Not a baby's one. So. But he was a smart person. He wasn't a devotee. He wasn't envious or demoniac. Otherwise, he might have got into some kind of resentment or something. But he just took it in stride. And he just thought, well, if 18th chapter Bhagavad Gita is what pleases the Lord, then I'm going to give him 18 chapters. I'm going to do what works, you know. So then he took a human form, and, you know, he was one of those extraterrestrials visiting Earth you hear about. But, you know. So he was here visiting the earth and he was trying to find a guru who's going to teach him the 18th chapter. I mean, here's Indra. He could probably pick up a Bhagavad Gita in a few places, but no, he wanted to learn from the right way. He wanted to learn from a bona fide guru, get connected with the guru parampara. First thing we do is, says, you have to take shelter of the guru, is you choose which guru parampara you want to take from. In the Vedas, it says there's 4 bona fide paramparas: Lakshmi, Rudra, Kumara, and Brahma. So we're in the Brahma Sampradaya, and Narad Muni, who's the teacher of Prachina Barhi, he's the second guru in our Sampradaya. So we're also followers of Narad. And this way, so first you find a bona fide parampara, then you find in the parampara who's the bona fide spiritual masters, founder acharya of the movement in the parampara, just like here we find it. Srila Prabhupada, he's in this Brahma Madhva Gaudiya Vaishnava Sampradaya, but he's established himself as an exceptional personality who's shown that he has got the mercy of Lord Chaitanya to spread the movement all over the world, which Lord Chaitanya had predicted. So he knows how people should practice it in the modern world. So someone may decide, I want to take shelter in his divine grace, Srila Abhaycharana Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada's movement, and then you find someone who's representing him to guide you. So like this, Lord Indra, ex-Indra, sorry, he wanted to find a guru. So he was looking around, he found a Krishna temple, Kaleshwara Krishna temple, and there he found an older Brahmana guru who knew the 18th chapter Bhagavad Gita, and he started to study under his guidance, 18th chapter. And so he learned the 18th chapter thoroughly. He thought, why just 5 verses? He memorized the entire chapter. He practically dedicated his life to 18th chapter Bhagavad Gita, give the Lord what he wants. He just took this as his motivation. I just want to please Vishnu. What will please him, I'll do that. So since he knew 18th chapter was a winning method, now they say in the Olympics, you know, that here Australia is an Olympic fever. When you come here, everything, you know, you fly in and so on. In the newspaper, they say now high tech is the latest thing. People have swimming suits made out of synthetic shark skin because you can skim through the water 3% faster. So they got the people kind of come there swimming in shark skin suits. Because they think they're going to get 3% advantage over the next guy. And all kinds of special, you know, hats that you wear, which are, you know, aerodynamically designed hats. You get a 0.1%, you know, shoes which have got, you know, certain. And all the big sporting companies are, this is their showcase. If they can get someone with a gold medal to wear a particular brand, then they're going to sell more sneakers the rest of the year to all the young people. So this is how the now it says, if anything works, someone said, look it, I'll wear anything, I'll do anything if I got a better chance to get a gold medal. So they said, these people, if something works, then everybody will start doing that. Pretty soon everybody will wear snakes or reptile suits or shark suits or whatever it works, you know, they'll everyone will wear that shoe or something. So everybody, of course, there's a lot of hype, and you know whether it really works, or the guy's just a faster runner. That's another thing. A faster swimmer, a higher jumper. But it's a good principle. You do what works. You know, I mean, that's in business, people tend to emulate success formulas. So Indra, he took that, you know, example that this worked for him, so it should work for me. That's what you call Mahajana Janata Katha Sapunta, following the footsteps of the Mahajanas in spiritual life, with particular people who are renowned devotees, and they're considered as stalwart examples of devotional service. So if we follow in their footsteps, then we'll be successful also. Well, he didn't have too many role models, but he had this one person that got him off the job, and Vishnu himself told him that I'm happy with 18th chapter. So he didn't really have any doubts about this. He knew this was a winning formula. So he learned the whole 18th chapter. Every day he chanted the entire 18th chapter. He was study it, read it. He was like absorbed in 18 chapters. Like it was his thing. And he was doing it with the idea, I'm going to please Vishnu. I don't know how long he did it for, but he did it for enough time that after some time, then again, two Vishnu Dutas came to visit him. And he paid his obeisances, and the Vishnu Dutas said, we come here to deliver a message from Lord Vishnu. Vishnu is pleased with you. It worked. So then they ask him, so what would you like? He's pleased with you. Now what would you? Would you like to be Indra again? Now if you were in his shoes, what would you choose?
Yes.
Yes. Truthful, huh? Would you take Indrasha back? Ruler of the entire universe, the visible universe. But somehow after reading the whole 18th chapter, he had a little bit expanded vision of things. And he said, you know, his response was, you know, no, I was there, I did that, been there. I don't want to be Indra again. After reading the 18th chapter, and I really understand now that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and that the most important thing is to get back to Him. So if you could take me to the planet where Krishna stays, and if I could serve Him there, I would like that. So the Vishnu Buddha said, well, yeah, we could take you there if you want. Sure, that's what you want? That's what I want. So he was taken back to Golok, back to the spiritual world.
Oh.
Itai go premanandi hari. So who won? Who got the better deal?
The
ex
Indra.
The ex Indra, or the Indra that, the Brahmana that became an Indra?
Ex Indra.
So, this is the thing. You can do spiritual activities, Krishna consciousness, and you can turn it in for good karmas. So you can, you know, you get with it good karmas also. So it says Krishna very easily gives people material blessings or liberation for devotional, you know, those for two devotees. Very easily gives that. Narada Muni explained that to King Yudhisthira. He said that Sri Krishna is your friend, he's your servant, he's your messenger, he's your protector of your family, he's your intimate confidant, your guide. He's so much connected with you because you have got pure devotion for him. So this pure devotion, Krishna doesn't give. He easily gives good karma, gives liberation. Because if he gives pure devotion, he becomes obliged to that devotee. He becomes so intimately connected with the devotee that therefore he's very much reserved about giving pure bhakti. Somehow you have it, and you are the most fortunate person because you have got this pure devotion. So the real solution to miseries in life and the real secret to full happiness is actually to get that pure devotion to Krishna. But normally it's not an easy thing to get. Because it's something that really has to awaken in the heart. We actually have the potential in our heart. Everyone has got bhakti within them, but it's lying dormant. And it doesn't get awakened by fruitive activities. It doesn't get awakened by mental speculation. It gets awakened by good association with devotees. It gets awakened by practicing devotional service, by chanting the holy names by some special mercy from a devotee or guru or Krishna himself. So Lord Chaitanya, his speciality is that he's actually giving out this bhakti. That is what is the most remarkable thing. I mean, for us, we might just take it as something, oh yeah, like, oh, bhakti, but those who know the universal value of things, they understand that bhakti is the most precious achievement that anybody could get. And Lord Chaitanya is giving it out freely. If we take it, it's up to, I mean, some people he just gives without even asking. Usually you have to ask for it. You have to want it somehow. But if you just want it, if you just take it, you can have it. People are so much in the modes of nature now that they don't even want devotion. I met a Catholic priest in India. He was from Kerala. Came to visit us in Mayapur. And I was trying to explain to him the importance of devotion. And he was telling me that it's not, you know, because like, Jesus says the first commandment, love the Lord thy God with all your heart, your soul, your mind. So I was saying it's the first commandment. Love, you know, that we have something in common. I thought this was... But he was like vehemently against that. He said, it's not practical, you know. It's like, second commandment, he said, love your neighbor like you love, you know. That's not different than the first. So you don't even need the first. Forget God. So what you really have to concentrate on is your neighbor. I was shocked. He's a Catholic priest. He's telling me, like, forget God. Just do your neighbor. It's the second commandment. It's not less than the first. So what do you need the first for at all? Because even God, you can't see him. You can't relate with him. We can relate with our neighbors. So let's deal with the reality that we're facing in life, you know. I said, wow, you know, this is like, I was surprised, you know, like, I heard there was atheistic priests, but I never met one. And maybe he wasn't a complete atheist, but for him, God was really much irrelevant. It was, you know, but he really wanted to serve people. So that was his good point, but see, everybody gets enough chickens and fish to eat. And so... It's very rare to find even holy people, so-called, that understand the value of love of God. You know, like Lord Chaitanya, he met those five Muslim preachers, and then he told them that, you know, in the Quran it says that you should achieve love of Allah. It says you should surrender. It says that Allah is nirakar. It also says he's sahakar. He's also without form, with form also. And then Lord Chaitanya backed it up by quoting surahs and ayats, the different verses from the Quran, and convinced them, and then they all accepted him as their guru. But most Muslims, they don't accept that Allah has a personality or a form. Although we did a study on the Quran to try to find where were the verses that Lord Chaitanya was referring to in his... discussion with the five peers, and we found that there was only two or three verses that said he's impersonal, and there was like so many verses. Like there's a one little booklet called The Hidden Treasure of the Holy Quran, which contains this research work. It shows the different quotes. And so much in there about loving Allah, loving God, and surrendering to Him and His personal nature, how He's merciful, He's kind, and He's compassionate and reciprocates. So many different things which are all personal characteristics. You never heard of a light being kind and merciful. So, but most people, they don't relate with it. They don't understand. So you got a situation in the world where very few people... They don't know karma, and even less people appreciate what is the love of Godhead. So even though Lord Chaitanya is giving it out freely, there are very few takers. Because if somebody is intelligent, Subhedha, Sumedhasta, if they're very, like Prabhupada said, a sharp intelligence, then they accept that chanting the holy name and accepting this mercy and love of Krishna. Because somebody, you know, like the ex-Indra, he was pretty sharp. He put, you know, he, people didn't get emotional about all these things, but he was pretty pragmatic and he just wanted to go with what worked. And if someone's like that, a sharp intelligence, this is what you, this is the highest gift you can get in this way, go for it. Why miss this chance to get the highest benediction? So you got these people, the role models, like King or Emperor Prachinabarhi, and he's still not satisfied in spite of being the Emperor of the world or the Emperor of Bharat Maharaj. He wasn't fully satisfied. He had all the material happiness, but then that's not satisfying. It's because we're not material. We are basically spirit. So we need a higher spiritual satisfaction that comes from Krishna consciousness, so that we have this opportunity to actually make people happy, to actually solve them from the, solve their miseries of their life. Put them out of their misery. Not in the way that's normally used. To actually make them spiritually happy. End their misery by bringing them out of the whole material conception of life. So, actually, each one of you, as representatives of Lord Chaitanya, you are also, Lord Chaitanya ordered everyone to be a guru, or ordered everyone to give this message to others. You all have the magic to be able to help some other person to become God conscious, to awaken to this. How you do it, that may require you have to, preaching is not just there's some mass production kind of ways of preaching, but ultimately when you get on one to one, you really have to know and hear what that person, where that person's at, and then how you can bring them up step by step to a better situation. So first thing Narada did is he listened to the king. He said, ask the king, what do you do? And what's your purpose in life? And the king told him about his fruitive karma and his successes. And then after hearing everything, then Narada just told him like it is. Well, you're good in all these things, but ultimately the purpose of life is to get rid of miseries and to understand who you are, to get real happiness. But the way you're doing it, neither you're going to solve all your miseries, nor you're going to get ultimate happiness. Boom! Right? Just told him like, and then after that, the king, he thinks about it for a microsecond, and then he admits it. You're right. Actually, I don't know what I'm doing. You know, I just follow what my forefathers did, what everybody's doing, but I'm all entangled in this, but I don't know what I'm doing. Could you please teach me? Because I need someone to guide me. And that's the most intelligent thing he could do. And if you find a bona fide spiritual master, you find a bona fide disciplic succession, you want to take shelter, you want to learn what is to be learned and actually achieve the real purpose of life. Get ultimate happiness and get resolve, overcome all your miseries. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. So we're very fortunate to have Prabhupada's shelter. He's brought us this wisdom. Take away our miseries and give us spiritual happiness. Unlimited happiness. Pure happiness. Shri Prabhupada ki
jai.
Is there any question? Yes.
I was just wondering,
Bhakti Sam.
The five verses in Indian's chapter about the keepers. Do you know which ones in that
one? You want to become an Indra or what? I don't know which five.
Mm-hmm.
And you're not the only person to ask me that question.
You're talking about trading in your devotional assets for some material thing. Is there a danger, like sometimes you see households, especially when they get married and they've done so much material, done so much spiritual life, but then when they get married they have to maintain a family or something, is there some danger that they can be like using their devotional assets to trade them into some material situation?
Whether you're living in a household ashram or living in one of the renounced ashrams, you should always chant Hare Krishna. If you use your household situation, Krishna service, then what Chaitanya said, it won't be an obstacle. If you use it to enjoy life and don't maintain your spiritual activities, then you'll get the enjoyment as an exchange. But that goes even people in renounced order. Like once Prabhupada in Mayapur, he was telling us that, you know, we built this fabulous palatial buildings here, and if somebody thinks that I want to come and live here and I want to enjoy the palatial facilities of being in the world headquarters of ISKCON, then that's what they'll get. But they won't get love of Godhead. But if they think that Krishna, Prabhupada, my Guru has given me all these facilities, I should use this for His service, and I use everything for Krishna's service, then in exchange I get love of Godhead. So someone may decide which ashram they want to fight Maya from, which status they want to be in. And obviously in the household ashram there's facilities, licenses for certain enjoyment. There's even, you know, maybe to a different or lesser degree, there's opportunities in different ashrams for some kinds of sense gratification. We don't do things to avoid sense gratification. We don't do things to get sense gratification as such. We do things calculating what's going to be good for my spiritual life. And if we keep, as far as possible, I mean, maybe human lapses here and there, but as far as humanly possible, we try to keep ourselves Krishna conscious, then Lord Chaitanya, and we are preaching and bringing other people to Krishna. Lord Chaitanya promised us, the brahmanas and the kurma desh, that don't worry. You know, I'll be with you and I'll come back to you. So, but you have to be careful. Somebody can always use some situations. There recently came in Bangkok, there's one Buddhist monk there. He's got 60 vintage cars, Rolls Royces, Mercedes Benz, and then finally the people, the newspaper, what is this guy? You know, he's supposed to be a Buddhist monk, he shaves completely his hair, eyebrows. You know, he's got 60 Rolls Royces and Mercedes Benz. Where is the guy getting off? He's getting donations from the people and he's buying these super expensive cars. Some are worth $100,000, $200,000, $50,000, $30,000. And he said, well, I'm just collecting them to make a museum of vintage cars. But it's like, what does a monk got to do with doing this kind of thing? He's supposed to be totally, you know, like, they're not even have the, you know, same, we at least we can engage some things, you know, we could engage a car in Krishna service, but they don't even have that concept of devotional service. So here is a monk, you know, and he was in head of an abbot of some thing, and he's collecting, you know, millions of dollars worth of cars and driving around in his cars and stuff. So I mean, Maya can, you know, maybe you become head of an ashram, or you become, you know, the Sankirtan leader. You know, Bhaktisiddhanta Saritakura said, don't use the Sankirtan vehicle to go and, you know, buy stuff for yourself. Use it for Sankirtan. If you had to buy some for yourself, walk. Because of course that time they had one car, and it was like a car then, it was like if he had a jumbo jet or something. or you know, you wouldn't just buy a jet, you know, just to buy ice cream or something. So he was, you know, that you should use things for Krishna's service. So we have to just have that integrity that whatever facilities we have, how to dovetail onto Krishna. The Guru guides us how to do that. You have a license to have children, you have a license to have a house, you have a license to... So you invite people over to your house, and then the house is used for preaching. And you raise your children to be Krishna conscious. You continue to chant, you offer your prasadam, you worship your deity. There's things that you do to purify your situation. If you're making money, then just by using the money for Krishna, you purify the money. If you have dirty cloth, you purify it by washing it in water. If you've got land that gets overused, and if you leave it fallow for some time and the wind and the sun and the rain falls on it, then it gets purified. So if you got a sick body, sometime by fasting it gets purified. There's different things that purify, and how you purify the senses is by austerities. How you purify money is by spending it for Krishna. So we have to purify our existence. The whole point here is that if our existence is pure, we'll be happy. And when our existence gets contaminated, we become miserable. So you want to be purified from material contamination, you want to be on the spiritual platform. So when you have these different facilities, whether in the renounced or in the grihastha ashram, you always have to keep your eye on the goal and not get lose track of what's happening. That makes sense?
Yeah.
Good luck. Hare Krishna.